After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Hurry into Menards and save big money. Stock up on water softener salt for softer skin and cleaner clothes. Diamond Crystal is the perfect choice of salt to minimize water softener tank residue. It helps your soaps and detergents clean better while increasing the life of your appliances and plumbing. Save big on Diamond Crystal products at Menards. And don't forget to check out the flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. Welcome to the Baseball America College Podcast. I'm Teddy Cahill. Today it is June 5th. It's a Wednesday. We're coming to you a little later because, well, first of all, regionals didn't wrap up until Monday, or at the end of Monday, late Monday night, really, frankly, when Stanford saw off Fresno State to finish off the regional round. And then there's this MLB draft thing going on. So it's a busy time of year at Baseball America. I would encourage you to check everything out over at baseballamerica.com. Plenty of NCAA tournament and draft content. And the minor league side is still doing its thing, too. So there's plenty to keep you busy over at baseballamerica.com. And it is a great time to subscribe, which you can do on the website as well. Today, we are here to talk about the Super Regionals and the Regionals that just finished up, but mostly about the Super Regionals to come this weekend. So to do that, we've got Dave Serrano and Joe Healy joining. So welcome in, guys.
Thanks for having me back, Teddy. We're less than a week away from knowing who is correct in their predictions of the final eight for Omaha.
Yeah, and Teddy, happy to be here. Looking forward to talking about it, chopping it up a little bit. And I don't know about you, but I can just feel those 105 degree days in Omaha just around the corner. Seems like it'll be here before we know it.
That it will. Omaha is right around the corner. It starts a week from Saturday. The College World Series kicks off, so it's coming fast, and it's been a long time coming. Dave, since you mentioned the predictions, I will note that in the eight for Omaha's each one of us did over at baseballamerica.com before last weekend, I have seven teams still standing. Joe has, I believe, it is six teams still standing. And Dave has, quick count, six teams still standing. So I am leading the charge right now. We will see if that continues. For the most part, we all have the same teams here.
Was that brought up because there's no way Joe and I could beat you in this race now?
I'm not going to say that's not the case. But, I think that... that might be a good point that I haven't thought about before. But I think there might actually be enough deviation that Joe might be able to pull this off still. But I could be wrong on that. I'd have to actually examine the bracket, which is what we are going to do. But before we do that here with the Super Regionals, let's look back briefly on the Regionals. Just what stood out to everyone from the weekend. Dave, you were in Morgantown. There for the West Virginia Regional, first time West Virginia had hosted in an awful long time. And they end up coming up short. Duke wins that regional. What stood out to you there or elsewhere around the country from what you were able to see?
Well, let me first start with the Morgantown Regional. It was an exciting atmosphere. I commend the administration of West Virginia. I commend the community of Morgantown. I thought they did a first class. They put it on in a first class manner. They attended it. It was a very wild atmosphere in that ballpark. Really got wild a few times when there were some reversals on calls by the umpires, and the Morgantown faithful were going a little crazy, to be honest with you. People standing on dugouts and yelling at the umpires and yelling at the opposing team and people getting kicked out of the stadium. But for the most part, I thought they did an excellent job. A very devastating way for West Virginia to end their season, up 9-1 in the seventh inning, only to see Texas A&M fight back into the game, and then eventually a walk-off grand slam in the bottom of the ninth inning to lose 11-10. Very tough to see that team walk off the field. And, you know, a team that I was part of a year ago and many seniors that walked off that field for the last time. But I thought it was a well-put-on regional, well-attended, and an exciting regional. And like I said off the air, you know, congratulations to Duke and Coach Pollard and his coaching staff. But, and this is by no means being negative, but the way Duke did it with what went on around in that regional, they did it in a very vanilla way. They just outpitched everybody. They were more efficient offensively, and they walked away going 3-0. And there was nothing real exciting. I thought Bryce Jarvis was really good on Saturday in the second round. I thought he was really good to keep West Virginia's offense at bay and beat them 4-0. But they just ho-hummed through that regional. And with all the other chaos that was going around, they just kind of went through it and ended up on top, and congratulations to them. But the one thing that surprised me, and I'm sure a lot of people around the country, was UCLA having to come through the loser bracket. Obviously, the number one team for the most part of the season, the number one ranked team in the seeding, and they had to fight back. They had to fight back, and they did it in good fashion, and they move on to the super regionals. But I thought for the most part there was some excitement around the country. Obviously, the big surprise was the Oregon State regional, the Corvallis regional, where they went 2-out, and Michigan comes out of that. So, you know, that was probably the big shocker for me around the country for what happened in all the regionals.
Joe, so you were taking it all in on with bases loaded, getting all Mike Rooney's thoughts on all the action from around the country. So you were able to see probably just a greater swath of games than either Dave or I was. So what were your thoughts from the regional weekend?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I was subjected to a really obscene amount of Mike Rooney this weekend. I love me some Mike Rooney. And pitchers are athletes, by the way, Mike, if you're listening. I know you are, Runes. Yeah, I mean, the thing that stands out to me is we kind of ended up with a chalky tournament, but not in a chalky way, if that makes sense. So by that, I mean, we ended up with, I think it's, what is it, 13 of 16 one seeds end up advancing through.
12,
thank you. So it ends up being pretty chalky, but Dave alluded to it a little bit. I mean, UCLA took an extra day to get there, and Louisville took an extra day to get there. East Carolina took an extra game. It would have been an extra day in a normal scenario, but extra game. Oklahoma State got pushed to the brink. So, it ended up kind of being a surprising way to arrive at that place. Also, when you look at it, I think, Teddy, you tweeted this out not long after the 16 sites got, or the 16 teams got finalized, that, you know, the three underdogs were three teams we had ranked in the preseason, obviously with Florida State, Michigan, and Duke. I mean, it's hard to call those teams underdogs. So they're three pretty big brands. But those were all teams that we kind of had ranked in the preseason. So it kind of stands to reason that, like, the talent has always kind of been there all along, that maybe these teams are just now kind of putting it together. Duke's kind of an interesting case, because a big reason why we had them ranked in the preseason was specifically Graham Stinson, and they don't have him and haven't had him for basically the entire season. So that's kind of unique. But otherwise, like Michigan and Florida State, maybe it's just a case where those two teams are kind of putting it all together at the right time. And that's part of the reason, I think, why I had both those teams actually come into their regionals. And a big reason why is I was like, you know, if we believed in this talent before, maybe they're just waiting for the right, you know, maybe they're waiting for something to kind of spark them again. And maybe the postseason is that thing. And so far, so good. We'll see. They, you know, both of them could kind of come into this weekend and flatten out again. And I suppose we'll see. But long story short, I was kind of entertained by the regionals because they played out in such an odd, weird way. But in the end, we kind of ended up with something along the lines of what we would have drawn up in a chalky way before regionals got started.
Yeah, I think that that's a good point, that, you know, we end up with these 12 hosts advancing, but there were a fair amount of games on Monday. A fair number of these regionals got pushed to game 7. And, you know, the hosts that did get pushed out, you know, got pushed out in a pretty interesting manner. You know, Oregon State going 0-2. I don't know that anyone really saw the defending champs going out like that. And, you know, Georgia Tech, in the winner's bracket game against Auburn, had that game all but won. And then all of a sudden, Stephen Williams crushed a 3-run home run. And that was where I was on Saturday night. And, you know, that was one of the most unbelievable endings to a game that I've seen this year. And a week ago I'd seen Auburn get walked off by LSU scoring two runs on a wild pitch. So, you know, like this outclass that, and you know, so that's how that went down. And I also thought that what happened in Athens, where I also was this weekend, with Florida State winning that regional and Mike Martin moving on to super regionals for the 17th time in 21 years, and extending his career by an extra weekend at least, it was amazing. But just the way that Florida State went about doing it, and just how offensive they were able to be against a really, really good Georgia pitching staff. And yes, the wind was blowing out at Foley Field all weekend, but no one else was scoring 10 runs a game. So I thought that was, just a very impressive showing from Florida State. A little bit unexpected that, they're moving on, but really unexpected the manner in which they move on. And that's a team that I feel like is now playing with a lot of momentum and a lot of confidence, and they're playing for something more because, they are playing, with this being Mike Martin's last season, there's an awful lot of emotion that goes into that as well. Joe mentioned that tweet that I sent out about how the three Cinderellas that are left in this tournament are Michigan, Duke, and Florida State. And the only reason that they're Cinderellas is because they're three seeds, and the NCAA said that they were the last three of the last four teams into the tournament. There's one school outside the non-Power Five left in this. That's East Carolina. And in baseball, the American is only barely outside the Power Five. Shout out Power Six, which I know is the official American rallying cry. It's a weird tournament again. And this is basically 2 years in a row of this. You know, a year ago in Super Regionals, at least Tennessee Tech made it through. You know, Fullerton is no underdog in baseball, but, you know, at least the Big West made it through. Those two teams were bounced in Supers, and we got an all-Power 5 Omaha, where Washington was your Cinderella story, or maybe Texas, just because of the way in which Texas had gone hot late in the season. And I don't know. There's going to be time to really evaluate whether this is a trend at this point, and if it is that trend, if that's healthy for the sport, that just a few years after Coastal wins the national title, we're increasingly seeing smaller conference schools getting pushed out by the dominance of the Power Five. I don't know if either of you guys have thought about that yet. It's not a take that I fully have formed myself. So if you haven't, there's going to be time for us to talk about this in the future. But what do you guys think of the fact that it's so Power Five heavy to this point of the tournament?
Teddy, I'll start out with that. I hadn't really broken it down like that, and I wasn't aware, obviously, because I was on the field last year, and I wasn't evaluating as much as I am this year from this side. But it is a little scary, and I'm saying that because I've been in the non-Power Five. I've been at the Fullertons, I've been at the UC Irvines, and we've always had good teams, teams that have been competitive, and there's many teams out there that are like that, and it is a little scary, I think, for the sport of baseball, because I believe there is some very good programs, well-deserving programs that are having tough times taking their program to the next level. Not a good sign for the Big West. I was very vocal that I felt a team like UC Irvine should have got in, was worthy of getting in, but a team that was talked about of being one of the eight seeds, a team that has been ranked very high all year, a team that was being talked about being host in UC Santa Barbara goes 0-2. So that's not a good sign for what's to come down the line, in my opinion. But it is what it is. I mean, it is. The strength of it is the Power Five schools. The truth of it is they should have a little bit of a leeway, not a leeway, but they should have a little bit of an advantage because a lot of them have a lot more money, better facilities to recruit to. But it is sad for the sport, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'll try to keep this brief because I know I could probably get on a little runaway train tangent here. But my thing is, I don't care for it. And that's not a surprise because I'm me. And I know that it's part of my brand that I'm all about the smaller schools, smaller conferences. And that's true. And that my entree into college baseball in a lot of ways was kind of being interested in, wow, this college baseball thing really allows these smaller programs to compete at a national level. So from that standpoint, it bums me out. But I'm actually, while I'm with Dave, that I don't want to see it continue to go that way, and that would be concerning. I'm not so sure that it's necessarily some sort of harbinger of things to come, because I think what we kind of saw this year was just kind of circumstantial things that made it play out this way. So by that I mean, you know, the Sun Belt was a little bit down. I mean, we're used to seeing the Sun Belt provide, you know, Coastal ended up getting in, but we're used to seeing Coastal be a at-large team for sure. So then it's a two-bid league if somebody else wins a tournament at a bare minimum. And then, you know, Louisiana's had its moments as an at-large team. South Al has had its moments as an at-large team. Conference USA didn't provide the number of teams we're used to them providing. The Big West, as Dave alluded to, didn't provide what we're used to seeing them provide. And I don't think that's going to be stagnant in that way. Now, I suppose you could make the argument to one of Dave's other points that there's just more money pouring into these Power Five schools, and so that gap is going to continue to widen. It's going to be harder for these Conference USA, Sun Belt, Big West schools to kind of make up ground. So I hear that argument, and I think there might be something to that. But I think when we look at a one-year instance like this, I just think as much as anything, it was the fact that some of these conferences were used to putting out quality at-large teams just didn't quite do that like we're used to seeing them do. And you know, I think a team like Irvine's a good example. I think that was a regional quality team, especially on the mound, that just didn't quite have the resume. So I think they got victimized a little by it. But for the most part, in these other leagues, it's not like there were teams that we believe, the three of us believed, were regional quality that got kind of hosed, if you will. I think it was just that those leagues that we're used to seeing produce those teams didn't produce them this year. So I wouldn't be shocked if next year it ends up kind of being not the full reverse, but if next year it ends up loosening up a little bit and going back to what kind of more what we've been used to.
Yeah, and it is true that we were just a few, you know, Campbell, which I had picked to win the Greenville Regional, you know, they ultimately got beat pretty bad by East Carolina in the two regional final games. But, you know, if one of those games just goes differently, Campbell is all of a sudden in a super regional, and Fresno only loses by a couple runs to Stanford, and they had, you know, Stanford had to beat Fresno twice. And, you know, LMU showed pretty well against the Bruins. They just, you know, again, got beat twice in the final two games. So, you know, it probably wasn't there probably don't need to be that many things that go differently, and all of a sudden you have two or three true Cinderellas in super regionals. But it is, you know, I'm not as confident as Joe is that, you know, Conference USA and Sunbelt schools are going to bounce back. I think life is getting harder there. And, you know, I don't think the Sunbelt is going to be a one-bid league forever. But, you know, I've now been at regionals with Florida Atlantic two back-to-back years, and, you know, John McCormick just talking about, like, how do we take the next step, and, you know, we got to reload. And, I mean, it's hard down there. And, you know, to make that next step to jump to winning a regional, you know, it's tough. And there are a lot of schools out there across the country trying to figure out how to do that. And, you know, that might be one of the tougher jumps to make in this sport. But again, I imagine that this is something we will dive back into either later in the tournament or in the off season. For now, I want to move on to the super regional matchups themselves. And so we mentioned that UCLA beat LMU to win the LA regional. They are paired in super regionals and hosting the super regional against Michigan, which won the Corvallis regional. Now, Michigan didn't actually have anything to do with eliminating Oregon State. They did not have to play the Beavers as the bracket worked out, but they did beat Creighton to win the Corvallis Regional. And Michigan, which entered the year as the Big Ten favorite, is carrying the Big Ten banner into Super Regionals. And for the second year in a row, the Big Ten banner is being carried into a Pac-12 Regional that looks very daunting. Last year, that was Minnesota going to Corvallis for Supers, and that didn't go so well. So, guys, does Michigan have any chance here? Did UCLA's hiccup against LMU make you guys reevaluate where the Bruins are? What are the thoughts going into LA this weekend? We'll start with you, Dave.
Well, I think, well, first of all, congratulations to Michigan. They're obviously playing at a high level right now. They have the talent. We know that. We recognize them as one of the better teams in the country early on in the year. I think you brought up a hiccup. I think the hiccup almost helps UCLA. It kind of opens up the light. Hey, our season could have ended. We're one of the better teams in the country. I think that hiccup in that regional and them fighting back through it almost propels them to have a much more successful super regional. Now, I say that cautiously because in the Dodgertown Classic, Michigan beat UCLA in the one time they played this year. So UCLA is not going to look past them at all. And I think that bodes even more for UCLA going into the super regional. The thing that was interesting as I was watching this thing play out, I'm getting off track a little bit, is this is one of the reasons why I think they need to probably reseed after the super regionals, because if Michigan won, or like they did win, and let's say Loyola would have won, that would have been held in Michigan, and you would have had two teams that weren't even highly ranked. They were both number three seeds, I think, in the tournament. And I've always believed when something like that happens, that's why reseeding in the super regionals after the 16 teams are formed is important, because I think it's about getting the best teams to Omaha, in my mind. And when a hiccup happens in a regional, and I'm not saying Loyola wouldn't have been worthy or Michigan, but I think there's other teams around the country that are worthy. But getting back on what you said, I think that the hiccup last weekend really does help UCLA this weekend. It's not going to be easy, but I think their eyes have been opened a little bit, and I could see them being very successful in this regional, super regional.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's obviously a tall task. You know, I would give Michigan a chance, though, because to the point I made when we started is that I think we believe in the talent they have on that roster. And, you know, if this had been a super regional matchup if you had told us before the season, hey, UCLA and Michigan are going to match up in a super regional, you know, obviously we have to take into account what happened. And that turns out that UCLA was, you know, arguably, it's either them or Vanderbilt, was the most dominant team during the regular season. And Michigan was a little bit up and down. But I think we believe that the true talent level, while UCLA's is better, is closer than I think those results would have indicated to us. So I think there's an opportunity there for Michigan to play well there. One other thing to consider, I think, is that, you know, of all the places to go to play a super regional, Jackie Robinson Stadium is not a crucible in the world of college baseball. It's not a place where you're going to have 10,000 fans breathing down your neck like you will in Mississippi State or Arkansas or what have you. And Michigan is kind of among the Big Ten programs. They're kind of a West Coast program. I mean, Eric Backich, their head coach, has some West Coast roots, and they've got, you know, I don't know, up to half a dozen players who are from the West Coast. They play on the West Coast every year. You know, they do the Dodgertown trip every year, and they stay out there for a while, and they're going to be comfortable playing out there. They also beat UCLA earlier this year. So there's going to be a comfort level there that some other teams, perhaps just enter any other Big Ten team, wouldn't have going to play UCLA. There's not going to be a mystique there that there might have been with some other teams that would have to go up against a team that they watched, you know, that team watched stay in number one in the polls all season. So it's a real tough task. Obviously, UCLA is the pick here, but I think Michigan's going to have more of a chance than you would think, even if we, you know, allow for the talent. I'm just saying from a comfort level standpoint, I think they're going to have more of a chance than you might consider.
Yeah, I think that's all fair. You know, I do agree with Dave, though, that the fact that they lost a game already probably is actually helpful, that, you know, they're not, they won't be taking Michigan lightly, having already lost and then having lost last weekend, you know, on Saturday to LMU. So I think that, you know, that all helps UCLA, and it also should help. I mean, to a certain extent, this will help Michigan as well, but UCLA had three guys drafted on Monday, and they have a few more still to go, I believe. They got some on Tuesday too, but to have the draft behind them, I think, is significant. Now, Michigan has draft picks. They had two guys drafted on Monday, but I think that helps UCLA more to be able to put the draft behind it and to move on. And so I think all of that working together, you know, means that This would be a significant upset, and I don't think that UCLA is going to be caught napping on this. They're going to be ready to go on Friday, and, you know, it's just going to be a tough ask for Michigan to go out there and win twice. So now we have, also starting on Friday, number two overall seed Vanderbilt and they get Duke in a rematch of last year's opening weekend series. Probably won't that probably won't have any impact on this weekend, but these schools do know each other a little more than you might otherwise expect. And Vanderbilt rolled through the Nashville Regional. They did not lose a game. Duke also did not lose a game in Morgantown, as we mentioned. Have to say Vanderbilt is another significant favorite here. In fact, I might feel more confident about Vanderbilt winning this regional than I feel about any region, any super regional rather. They're a freight train, and Duke, while they're showing plenty of moxie down the stretch here, it's kind of hard to see how they overcome this Vanderbilt team. But Dave, what are your thoughts heading into the Nashville Super Regional?
I cautiously say this, Teddy, because I agree with you completely that this is one that looks like chalk is going to play out completely. But if you're Tim Corbin and his coaching staff, and hopefully the players too, this is the one with past experience that you're almost afraid of if you're wearing the Vanderbilt uniform, because it is seems like it's supposed to be so one-sided. You know, as I said, and I by no means was putting down Duke earlier when I said they kind of just did it in a vanilla way. That's kind of how they did that, won the regional. But they have a good team. I talked to Coach Pollard a lot. We stayed at the same hotel in Morgantown, and he really likes his team. He thinks there's a real toughness to their team. And they're playing with house money now. You know, they have nothing to lose. And that, as a coach, as a former coach, you're almost worried about going into a weekend series or super regional with that, with the opposing team having that kind of mentality. I do like Vanderbilt here. I think, I don't know if Duke's offense can keep up with what Vanderbilt's going to bring to the table. But I think it's a little bit, I think I'd be scared, a little scary if you're in the, if you're a Vanderbilt fan or if you're part of that program, because this is so one-sided. But I do like Vanderbilt. I think, you know, obviously the pitching for Duke was really good in the Morgantown region. It's going to have to do that again in the super regional. But I like Duke in this. I like Vanderbilt in this just because I don't know if Duke has enough consistent offense to keep up with what Vanderbilt's going to bring to the weekend series.
Yeah, I'll keep it brief because I don't have a whole lot to add there. I'm with you guys. I feel more confident in Vanderbilt than I do in UCLA for the reason you stated here. I will say it's interesting, and Teddy touched on this. These two teams played to begin last season. I was at that series, and I remember writing at the time that, you know, it was kind of a coming out party in a lot of ways for Duke, because that was a Vanderbilt team that was obviously quite talented. And this was a Duke team that was kind of trying to establish consistency. And they went out on the road at Vanderbilt and played toe to toe with them. They lost that series, but, you know, they won the middle game of the series. They played them tight otherwise. I kind of saw it as this, that program kind of growing up. So it would be kind of poetic if, you know, they had this big breakthrough against Vanderbilt, you know, a couple of years later. So, but with that being said, I'm with you guys in that, for me, this is Vanderbilt. It's a really tough ask for Duke to be able to slow down that offense, the Vanderbilt offense enough and score enough themselves, to overcome them. Now, if they had a healthy Graham Stinson and Adam Lasky, now we might be talking, but of course they don't, and they haven't. So I think it's Vanderbilt here, pretty comfortable in that pick.
We'll stick with the Friday games, or the Super starting on Friday, and we'll go to Lubbock, where Texas Tech swept through its regional, knocking out Dallas Baptist in the championship game. And they will get Oklahoma State, which got pushed a little bit in the Oklahoma City Regional, had to play a seventh game against UConn, ultimately knocked out the Huskies there. Oklahoma State pitched at a really high level all weekend long, only 11 runs given up over their four games. And they will now look to carry that over into the weekend. This is a rematch from earlier in the year, about a month ago. Oklahoma State went to Lubbock, got swept. Frankly, I was asked on Campus Insiders on Stadium today what would give Oklahoma State optimism about, like, flipping this. What would have to happen for them to flip this result? And I had a little bit of difficult time coming up with an answer. My answer ultimately is that they need to pitch the way that they pitched this weekend. But, you know, this one, a lot was made at the start of the tournament about how there could be five supers if chalk held, that would be in conference matchups. Ultimately, we only get two of them. But my biggest complaint about all of that was that we had seen literally every one of those matchups before, and almost all of them, maybe even all of them, were just going to be played in the same site even. Like, I just don't need to see that again. And, you know, maybe Oklahoma State now, they've gotten really hot since they went to Lubbock the last time. Maybe they can carry that momentum in. They've, since then, they won a series in Corvallis. They won the Big 12 tournament title. They're playing a lot better, but it's still hard to see them going into Lubbock, where Texas Tech plays so well, as I've mentioned several times this season, and they have plenty of momentum of their own. But Joe, you were at the Big 12 tournament where Oklahoma State did end up winning. Do you think that Oklahoma State, do you think the Pokes have a chance to flip this result?
Yeah, absolutely. I think they really do. I mean, I think Jensen Elliott is pitching better than really anybody on either of these two teams right now, I think. I mean, I think he certainly gives you a chance in the game he starts. And, you know, Oklahoma State's turned their pitching just in general around the second half of the season, a thing I wrote about leading up to regionals last weekend, and that it's not just him. It's, you know, it's Parker Scott and Brett Stanley and Peyton Battenfield in the bullpen. And that's really been a huge, huge key for them. And, you know, I don't know if this helps or hinders them or if it matters at all, but, you know, Oklahoma State does kind of have a feel of kind of America's team right now a little bit, because, you know, I think everyone collectively on Saturday when Trevor Boone hit that home run in Oklahoma City, I think college baseball's Twitter did that thing, like that cartoon thing where your eyes turn to hearts, you know, like when he hit that home run and, you know, yelled boom as he hit it and had a bat flip and it broke the letter at Bricktown Ballpark on the lights above the video board. I think people have kind of caught on to that. This is kind of a fun team, if nothing else. It's a lot of feast or famine on offense, and you know, got a lot of guys with emotion and, you know, big celebrations and all that. So I don't, like I said, I don't know if that helps, hinders, or doesn't matter at all, but it is kind of an interesting thing we have going into this. And you know, Dan Lawfield this time of year can play very offensive. So wouldn't be surprised to see a lot of runs put up here. So I think it really will come down to which of these two pitching staffs that really has kind of reinvented themselves through the year ends up pitching a little bit better. Because I mentioned Oklahoma State's, you know, how they've been revamped, and Texas Tech's kind of been a similar thing. I mean, you know, Caleb Killian's been pretty solid for a while now, but Micah Dallas going into the rotation has been a huge key for Texas Tech steadying things out there in the rotation. And then in the bullpen, John McMillan's been really, really good. When I saw him earlier in the year, granted on a cold, nasty day in Frisco, velocity was a little bit down, was having trouble commanding things, but he's been really, really good as of late. You know, Taylor Floyd's been a really nice piece out in the bullpen. So these are two teams that had major pitching question marks at different points of the season that seem to have, for the most part, answered them. Now, they're not UCLA's pitching staff, clearly, and they don't even really have maybe the high-end piece of, you know, Louisville when Reed Detmers is really, really on. But they both have really solid pitching staffs that I think are both capable of stringing together outs, and which one does that this weekend I think is going to be the biggest thing.
Dave, I think Oklahoma State has a chance here.
Yeah, I think they have a chance. I really do. I went against Texas Tech in the regional, and I'm going to do that again. And nothing against Tim Tadlock. I have a ton of respect for him, and I think what he's done with that program. I like the way Oklahoma State is playing. I think Joe said it perfectly about America's team. I agree with that. And nothing that they're doing is fabulous. They're just doing it. And I have a ton of respect also for Josh Holliday and Rob Walton. And again, kind of like what I said about the Vanderbilt Super Regional, if I'm Texas Tech, I'm a little concerned because, you know, the law of averages kind of weighs itself out. And getting, you know, with Oklahoma State getting swept the first time, you know, the tide's going to turn. And with a coaching staff of Josh Holliday and Rob Walton, you don't see them losing 5 out of 6 to somebody very often. So I like Oklahoma State. I think this is one of the better Super Regionals, the more evenly matched Super Regionals, and I see this going to Game 3. It's going to be an exciting Super Regional, and I'm going against the Red Raiders again. I'm going to take the Cowboys of Oklahoma State.
Wow, all righty. So it is true, though, that these two teams know each other very well. So, you know, the more times they play each other, you know, it's going to be just difficult for Texas Tech to win 5 games in a year against Oklahoma State. There's no doubt about that. So that will be an interesting one to play out in Lubbock this weekend. I am fascinated by the last Super that starts on Friday. That is Louisville hosting East Carolina. They both had their struggles in their regionals. I saw East Carolina's struggles coming, obviously, since I did pick Campbell to win that regional. I did not see Louisville struggling in the way that they did. That regional got a lot of controversy when Michael McAveen, Louisville's closer, was ejected for seemingly saying something not all that much to an umpire after a pitch he thought was a strike was called a ball, and McAveen was walking away. So he that triggers an automatic 4-game suspension, which will carry over into part of the super. So that is one thing to keep in mind, as Louisville is now without McAveen for the first couple games here. They still have the advantage on the mound, but East Carolina, they have 47 wins this year, and they've been playing very well from start to finish. They have a lot of experience playing top end teams. They're not going to be intimidated going into Louisville. It's a team that played at UCLA, played in Starkville, played in Oxford this season alone. I just really am going to be interested in that. And these are two fiery teams with, there's going to be a lot of heart shown. And I wouldn't be surprised if we got some more fireworks this weekend in Louisville. Joe, you've seen the Cardinals. What are your thoughts on their chances against the Pirates this weekend?
Yeah, I like their chances. I think that's another team that I think getting pushed like they did, there were a couple things at play. I think getting pushed like they did might be a little bit beneficial. I also think that, that situation with Michael McAveen, I mean, I think for sure in that regional fired them up a little bit. I'm certain that Illinois State was not particularly thrilled that they seemed to be ignited a little bit after that play happened. I'm not sure it changes the result or anything. We'll never know that, but certainly they didn't need any extra motivation and they got some. So that was kind of an interesting thing there. And, with East Carolina, I wonder, as much as they would like to play at Clark LeClair, I'm sure they would. That's a great fan base that turns out in huge numbers. And Cliff Godwin's been very, very vocal about how much he appreciates that support. I mean, that was kind of one of the things you saw time and again this past weekend was him in postgame talking about how much the fan base means to him and means to his players and so on and so forth. The other thing about it is that, I mean, this is a team that's very, everyone's very aware. This is probably the most successful college baseball program in the modern era that has not made a trip to Omaha. And maybe in some way there's a positive to going on the road and kind of not feeling some of that tension. I mean, the fan base wants it so bad. Cliff Godwin wants it so bad for his team and his program. And the players obviously want it so bad. Maybe there's something freeing about going on the road and maybe playing a little looser and not having that type of thing kind of hanging there. And I've never been a coach. I've never been in that position. Dave could speak to it better than I could. But I almost wonder if there's a little bit of positive in playing away from home, given that situation and kind of what they're trying to accomplish for the first time.
Dave, I guess, yeah, what are your thoughts on that? I know that's something Fullerton has experienced. And then also, what did you think about the ejection and what people have talked about with the lack of an appeals process for the players?
Well, first, let me talk about East Carolina going on the road. I completely agree. And I'm not saying this because they were my pick to be one of the Omaha Eight. I think it does release some of the tension. I've played in that ballpark before. And it is, it is a ruckus crowd and there tends to be pressure and there may be a little bit of pressure relieved now that they get to go on the road. And I really believe I have all the respect for the Louisville program and what Dan does there. But I think this is the year East Carolina does get to Omaha. And I think it's going to be, like you said, it's going to be a lot of emotion. There's going to be a lot of stuff going on in that regional, but I see East Carolina coming out on top. As far as the ejection, I am really against it. I saw the video many times. There was nothing he really said that was in bad, it was that terrible. I think that's exactly what I read out of his, or that's horrible. He didn't say that he was horrible. He said that was horrible. And I just think it was an umpire that was maybe got a little too emotional. I would venture to guess that if you asked the umpire today, and I don't know his name, and it's probably better I don't know his name to say it publicly, but I would venture to guess that he probably regrets his decision on how he handled that, because it affects the team. And I'm all about when someone crosses the line that they should be punished and ejected from a game. But I think in that case, that's the kind of situation where the people with more power need to intervene and say, this is something that needs to be changed, because it could have a big outcome for this weekend. And that's not fair to the other 34 players and the coaching staff and the fan base in the administration of Louisville if it does have an effect, because there was nothing that was really done at a contest that really deserved a four-game suspension with that ejection. But going back, I like East Carolina to get to Omaha, Cliff Godwin taking his program to Omaha for the first time, and I also believe playing away from home will take away some of the pressure. And again, like I said earlier, they're playing kind of with house money now. They're not expected to win on the road in the Super Regionals, and this will be the year they come out on top.
Yeah, that'll be very interesting to watch this weekend. I think that'll be a fun one. It did not get some great TV times, but at the same time, that means if you're looking for baseball early in the day on Friday or Saturday or Sunday, you should be able to tune into some good ones there in Louisville. Moving on to the Supers starting on Saturday. Let's start with Ole Miss and Arkansas, the other all-conference matchup that actually came to fruition. Arkansas here, they really rolled through Fayetteville. I wasn't surprised by that in any way. We talked about kind of just regionals that we didn't really see much of or pay much attention to. For me, that was Fayetteville. Like, I was aware that Nicola Dolo was pitching against Arkansas, and that was about it. Oh, and I know that TCU hammered Jared Horn. But beyond that, I didn't see a ton of Arkansas this weekend. I know that they handled their business very well. Ole Miss also handled business in Oxford very well after what happened last year in Oxford with them losing to Tennessee Tech. I'm not surprised that they didn't get pushed harder. Also, I felt like they kind of got a little bit of a sweetheart regional. They ultimately see off Jacksonville State, another Ohio Valley Conference team. A little bit of poetry there. After they lost to Tennessee Tech last year, this year they knock off Jacksonville State in the regional final. They have the home field advantage, and it's a significant one. So, I mean, I have to like the Hogs here, you know, against the Rebs. But, you know, we've talked about how hot Oklahoma State is. This is an Ole Miss team that won the SEC tournament, nearly won the SEC tournament, just got beat by Vanderbilt there, and now is coming off of a sweep of their regional. So they do have a little bit of momentum. You know, Ole Miss won this series. They went into bomb earlier this year and won. So that is a place that they're familiar with, of course, being SEC West foes. No one's going to be intimidated here. It's just going to be, you know, who goes out and wins. And I think it's going to be an interesting one. But for me, Arkansas is the favorite here. Dave, what do you think about this one?
To that, and I could be wrong on this, but I want to say that Ole Miss won the game, the matchup in the SEC tournament too, to eliminate Arkansas. So I think right now, in fact, I thought I saw heard
they
that
split in the SEC tournament, but yes, they did eliminate Arkansas.
Okay, so I was right. What I heard, I think I had heard that Ole Miss had won four out of the last five that they played, or something like that, or three out of the last five that they played. I think the biggest thing, what you said, I think the stadium, the atmosphere is the difference here. I see Arkansas coming out on top. It's not going to be easy because I really, truly believe you go back to 3 weeks ago when Ole Miss was really struggling and people were scratching their heads, what's going on with the Rebels? They've turned it on at the right time. But I see Arkansas coming out on top. And I think the big reason why is the home field advantage in the Super Regional, which is going to be a little different than a weekend series in the SEC, even though that's crazy. It's going to be even crazier and wilder in a Super Regional. And I like Arkansas to get back to Omaha. And I think they have a chance to make another run off of what happened last year. And kudos to Dave Van Horn and his team and his coaching staff, because after what happened last year, for them to be back almost knocking on the door of getting back to Omaha, and there's a lot of talent there too, but emotionally and psychologically for what they had to go through being one out away from being national champions, I think they have a chance to get close or have a chance to play for the national championship again. I like the Hogs in this Super Regional.
So it's funny, Teddy, you mentioned that you didn't watch much of the Fayetteville Regional, because obviously I was watching a lot of Bases Loaded, but I feel like even they didn't really watch much of that regional because for the same reason. And I was actually on an Arkansas podcast leading up to regionals, and I mentioned that very thing. I said, you know, what's funny is that I think the best compliment I can give the Arkansas program is I feel like I don't see much of Arkansas until they get into a super regional or if they get to Omaha, because, and I don't have their entire history here in front of me, so maybe there's an Arkansas fan out there screaming about the one time that, you know, that they kind of got tripped up in a home regional, but I feel like for the most part they do a really good job of that, taking care of business in their home regionals and not really making it, without incident, getting through without incident. So I was kind of came into the weekend thinking that might be the case again. It absolutely was. I like Arkansas here as well. I mean, Ole Miss has been so up and down, and a lot of times that up and down has been due to what they get from the pitching staff. And while Will Etheridge and Doug Nikhazy have been actually, you know, in the abstract, really good for them this year, they are kind of more pitch to contact guys on the spectrum of things. I mean, there's no John Doxakis on this pitching staff, for example, or an Ethan Small on his pitching staff, for example. So with that being kind of their style there, I just don't know that fits well with what Arkansas is going to do. So it seems like a tough matchup there. And on the other side, Isaiah Campbell's been really, really good as of late. So I like their chances certainly to get off to a really good start there. And then, of course, when you're trying to come back from losing that first game, it's a tough thing to pull off. So I like Arkansas here. It wouldn't shock me if Ole Miss makes it a series, because that's kind of what they've done all year, is when the expectations drop kind of low, they rise back up. But, I think it's kind of a tough stylistic matchup for Ole Miss as much as anything else.
Yeah, that is a good point about Ole Miss. They do seem to rise to the occasion when their backs are against the wall. And if they get in that situation here this weekend, it will be interesting to see how they respond. We also have here on the Saturday Supers, we have Auburn, which upset Georgia Tech in the Atlanta Regional. They beat Georgia Tech twice. They move on to face North Carolina, another ACC opponent. UNC took care of business in a big way in their regional, beating Tennessee to move on to Supers. And North Carolina now has won 7 straight since the end of the regular season. They won the ACC tournament at the end of the regular season. The way they played against North Carolina State, the final 2 days of the regular season, I didn't think the Tar Heels were going anywhere in the postseason. All they've done is win 7 straight games. So they're coming in with momentum. Auburn is coming in beat up on the pitching staff. Tanner Burns is probably not going to do much of anything in the Super Regional. He may make an appearance as a reliever for an inning or so. But once Auburn gets past Jack Owen and then a couple of their big-time relievers, they are going to be thin on the mound, and North Carolina has a big advantage in terms of the pitching, which is why I like the Tar Heels here. But Joe, do you see that playing out any differently?
No, not really. I mean, knowing all of that, I mean, it's hard to really go against North Carolina. But the thing about it is, Auburn's had to play like this so long this year. I mean, this is essentially what they've been all year. I mean, Tanner Burns has, for the most part, I mean, he's thrown a lot of games. He hasn't missed that many games kind of in the big picture, but he's been compromised for a decent amount of it. Jack Owen was out for a long period of time. And so it kind of feels like this is how, of course, they've not had Davis Daniel really at all. So it kind of feels like this is just how they've had to go about their business all year. So I do think there is some sort of inherent advantage of them knowing, like, you know, we're a little bit beat up on the mound. We're just going to have to ugly up this game and then try to win ugly. And they do a pretty good job of that. I mean, they've done a really good job this year. I mean, they were never really in the mix, at least in the second half of the year, never really in the mix to host a regional, but they were also never really too seriously on the bubble. They were just kind of a steady team that always did enough to keep themselves in that position. So I like North Carolina here, but to your original point, Teddy, like it's not like North Carolina was this bastion of consistency throughout the year. I mean, they've had their own issues on the pitching staff. They've been healthier outside of Dulatri, I suppose. But they, you know, sometimes it's been a struggle to put back-to-back weekends together where they've gotten good outings from their starters. So, you know, it's also not, doesn't seem like it's out of the realm of possibility that Auburn comes in there. And like I said, just kind of makes it an uglier game, knocks UNC starters out of the game early, and kind of wins a battle of just stitching it together and maybe the advantage of them having had to win this way all year kind of, ends up pushing them up and over and above. But I think just on paper, you have to like UNC to come out of it, just how much better they're set up going into it.
And that is a good point about, just Auburn's moxie, Butch Thompson. I continue to be amazed by the job he does there. Dave, do you think do you think that or anything else gives Auburn a chance here to go on the road to Chapel Hill and you know break back through to Omaha?
Well, you kind of just said it, and I'm going to repeat it. You know, Joe, as I've realized over time throughout this year, Joe is very intelligent in his words of what he says, and that was a very intelligent comment about Auburn. I don't think they're feeling sorry for themselves. Oh, we're down some guys. We're not supposed to. They've done it all year long like that. And again, you said it, Butch Thompson is doing another great job. I'm going to kind of go with the sentimental favorite here because of what Auburn had to endure last year in the Florida Super Regional and how they lost that game that propelled Florida to Omaha. I'm going to go with Auburn in this. I like this matchup for them. I know North Carolina is playing good baseball with winning seven straight. They went through their regional pretty easily. But I kind of like Auburn here because of the toughness of what they've had to go through. Starting last year at the end of the year, what they've had to go through this year with the injuries. I kind of like the odds against them coming out on top of this. And then another great coaching job by Butch Thompson and his coaching staff. I like Auburn to advance to Omaha.
All right. So we now we're down to, for my money, the two juiciest supers on the board this weekend. Let's start with Stanford crossing the country to face Mississippi State. You had Stanford, like we mentioned, got pushed by Fresno State in their home regional. Mississippi State was pushed by Southern in the opening game. Ultimately, the Bulldogs won that game and went on and really took care of business the next couple days. They survived their scare without a loss. Stanford, of course, did have to play that seventh game against Fresno State. I just love when the Pac-12 and the SEC match up. I think that's a lot of fun. I think that this environment is going to be amazing. You know, Duty Noble is going to be absolutely rocking for its first Super Regional with this new stadium. And, you know, Stanford is a team that, you know, has a lot of power. And the way the new ballpark is playing in Starkville, you can hit some home runs there. So I think that, you know, that's going to be an interesting matchup. You know, you have to like what Mississippi State has on the mound, but Stanford has some depth there. I don't know. I could see this, you know, I like Mississippi State in it, but I can see Stanford really making some noise here. And I don't know. I am very interested to see how this one plays out. Dave, what are your thoughts on Stanford going to Starkville?
You said it perfectly, Teddy. I think part of you know, a West Coast team that plays in the Pac-12, they're not going to be used to this atmosphere. This is going to be an atmosphere that this team probably has not seen in a long time. And I know that because Stanford has hosted regionals and they haven't gotten out of regionals the last few years. And they notoriously don't go very far east to play their non-conference games. So it's going to be a different atmosphere for this group to get through. I like Mississippi State at home. But my big concern is TJ Ginn and what his health is. I think if he's healthy, they have an advantage. I think this is going to be a high-scoring super regional. And I think the advantage, you know, Mississippi State is a good team. This is one of those situations that I talked about earlier about the reseeding. It's almost like these two teams shouldn't be playing because these are two worthy teams of going to Omaha, and one of them is going to be eliminated. But I think the atmosphere and the fact that it's going to be a high-scoring event. I like Mississippi State at home, but I'm a little cautious because I'm not sure exactly. I know TJ Ginn was taken out of the game last weekend, and I'm not sure what his status is. And I think that does weaken the Bulldogs' pitching a lot, which could help Stanford. But I still like Mississippi State in a really close, one of the better Super Regionals coming out on top.
Yeah, I think this one's going to be a lot of fun for all those same reasons. I think it's interesting that it is that Pac-12 SEC matchup that Teddy alluded to. And I think there's a tendency to kind of look at it as, oh, this will be an interesting stylistically SEC power arms and power hitters and Pac-12 going to come in there and try to slap the ball around and bun. And this ain't that necessarily. Stanford's going to come in there and slug too. So that'll be interesting stylistically. And then Stanford brings some athleticism too. They run a decent amount. So that'll be just kind of interesting difference in what we've seen from these type of cross-regional matchups before, and JT Ginn's health is kind of a concern. But I'm knowing that it's only going to be three games, and this is not like a regional, obviously, in that, you know, regional could be three games, it could be four, it could be five. With the Super Regional, you know it's no more than three games, and so I think Mississippi State has an advantage where even if they aren't at full health, they know they've got Ethan Small at the front and that Peyton Plumlee's been really solid for them. I think they're comfortable just doing a bullpen game in one game if they have to. They've done that this year before. I think they've got the depth out there to be able to pull that off, kind of a scripted bullpen game, if you will. So I'm not as necessarily worried about that. And I've been on the Mississippi State train all year from when I saw them early this year. I think there's depth everywhere. I mean, clearly at this point that has been borne out with the results. So no reason to go away from it here. But I'm with you guys. I think this one's just going to be a whole heck of a lot of fun. Stanford is obviously very, very talented. It's a team we thought highly of all year. So it wouldn't be a surprise if they came out of this one. But I just think this Mississippi State team has been on another level most of the year. And I just really like their talented depth.
Yeah, the other thing with Ginn is that he came out of that game on Friday. This super doesn't start until Saturday. They'll throw Small in game one. So he gets two extra days to recover. We'll see if that's enough. They haven't announced anything. Ginn tweeted something kind of maybe indicative of him being able to pitch, but you know, we'll just have to see as things get closer to the start of that super. The last super regional matchup is Florida State, which upset Georgia in Athens, like I mentioned. They are going to LSU to play Baton Rouge. LSU swept through that field, got tested a bit in a couple of the games. Southern Miss made things interesting in the regional final, but ultimately LSU sweeps through, and they now get their home super against what has to be the sentimental favorite of the tournament. I mean, I know it's mine, but like that, I think nationally, you talk to people around college baseball, I think most people want to see Mike Martin minimally get to Omaha this year. You know, so Florida State, you know, is playing for a lot more than just you know, the normal national championship stuff. They're trying to send Mike Martin out on top and to extend his career and everything. So it's going to be a really fun atmosphere in the box. These are two of the bluest bloods in college baseball. They have not matched up very often at all, which is interesting, at least you know, in on-campus sites. I'm pretty sure they've matched up in Omaha, but they Florida State hasn't been to Baton Rouge since the mid-80s. So, you know, that's just going to be a fun atmosphere with those two teams, those two fan bases, you know, going at it this weekend. I think that's going to be, you know, one of the marquee supers that everyone's watching for in terms of that kind of stuff. But I think on the field, it can be very interesting as well. Florida State really started crushing the ball this weekend, and now they're going to Alex Box Stadium, which can get pretty offensive, especially this time of year. And, you know, I talked last week about how I felt like LSU had the advantage on the mound over Arizona State and Southern Miss, which is something that hasn't been said a ton in the second half of this year. But I now think that the advantage on the mound is negated, that I don't think either one of these pitching staffs is particularly better than the other. Florida State might have an advantage in terms of frontline guys, but LSU might have more depth. But I think ultimately this is these are two teams that if they're operating at their best, and it certainly looks like Florida State's finally hit its stride, they're difficult to parse. So it'll be interesting. It's hard to beat LSU in the box, but I do like what Florida State has going for it, the mojo it has, the momentum it has. And so I like the Noles to get back to Omaha, but I've liked the Noles to get to Omaha since for more than a year now. They're my preseason pick to win the national championship. So Joe, give us a little, I don't want to say unbiased because I don't want to say I'm biased, but give us a little more neutral take from this regional.
Yeah, I really don't. I don't know that I have a take. That's the thing too, because I don't really know what to expect here. You know, there's just, these two teams have been, it's kind of funny they end up together because they're two of the teams that have been most confounding this year. Obviously with Florida State being so highly ranked, and it wasn't just us, by the way, it's not like we were out there on an island on feeling good about Florida State this year, and then to have them struggle the way they did and now kind of maybe rebound at the right time. And LSU kind of similarly went through its struggles in SEC play. And there were a lot of times where, you know, we had our talks and our top 25 discussions on Sundays about like, do we, do we drop? And there were times where they were in the late teens in the rankings, and we were thinking maybe one more week and LSU is not ranked, but they always stayed in and they would bounce right back up, and they yo-yoed more than, you know, I think they and Ole Miss were probably the two teams that yo-yoed as much as anybody else this year. So I don't really know what to expect. And they both kind of rounded, the other thing I would say is they both kind of rounded into form in different ways. LSU, you mentioned, kind of firming up that pitching a little bit. They've had to mix and match a whole lot out there, but it kind of feels like they've hit on some things late that have really helped in that way. And so I'm with you there that their pitching looks a whole lot better than it did a month or 6 weeks ago. And we've talked about that before. So I don't really know where to go here. I guess it's hard to bet against LSU and Alex Box Stadium. That always seems like a safe bet to go with them there. I think you're right, and it's going to be just one of the more fun super regionals we have. I'm probably going LSU just because of that, the factor with the Alex Box Stadium being kind of a difference maker there. But I think it's going to be tight, and I think LSU's, you know, or, I'm sorry, Florida State, you know, as if they needed any more motivation, they know what's on the line here. They know that it's 11s last year, and you know, nobody, I think sometimes the extra motivation thing gets played up a little bit too much, because if these guys don't need any extra motivation to try to win in a super regional, clearly. But that being said, I mean, that is a little something extra hanging out there. So this one's going to be a whole lot of fun, and I don't have any sort of read on where it's going to go from here. Side note real quick, the 2017 Fayetteville Regional, for all those Arkansas fans out there, that's the one I found. Missouri State, a Jake Berger-led Missouri State team won the Fayetteville Regional in 2017. So that's the one that the Arkansas fans were shouting at me when I said most of the time they take care of business. So just wanted to get that out there before I get tweets about it. So anyway, no real read. I mean, this one's tough to read, but I'm going to go LSU. Alex Box Stadium feels like they've kind of gotten some things figured out that they struggle with during the season, but I can't wait to see it for sure.
Dave, what are your thoughts? Is Florida State getting back to Omaha one last time with 11?
As in all my coaching days, and I learned this from Coach Horton, and you know, playing for him and coaching under him, we always talked about the baseball gods, and the baseball gods know. And if you just look at this scenario of Florida State going to the box, playing LSU, if this is Coach Martin's last game at Florida State, he ends it in a historical place of college baseball in Baton Rouge against LSU. And I don't think the story could end any better, but I think it does end better because I think Florida State ends up winning this super regional. It is almost nearly impossible most of the time to win an Alex Box in this kind of atmosphere, and especially this time of year. But I think the baseball gods are behind 11, behind the Florida State team. And the other thing I look at is, we just saw Florida State go into Athens and beat what is probably one of the better pitching staffs in college baseball, one of the better teams in college baseball, and they beat them pretty handily. And they went through that regional pretty handily. And, you know, LSU has had a good team all year. They haven't been quite at the level as maybe the consistency of Georgia. They don't have the pitching of Georgia. So for me, it's about does Florida State keep this momentum going? And I think the fact that they know what they're playing for, and they're not just playing for 11, they are playing for 11, but they're also playing to get to the College World Series too, that this program is notoriously in a lot of times. So it's going to be exciting. It's going to be wild. But like I said, at the end of the day, it's Mike Martin. If this is the end, he finishes his career in one of the most historical places of college baseball, where Skip Bertman built that program. But I think they get past LSU and they propel into Omaha. It'll be the story of all stories of college baseball for years to come. But I like Florida State to win in a tight one in Baton Rouge.
Yeah, that's going to be absolutely must-see viewing this weekend. I cannot wait to see how that one shakes out. So that brings us to the end of the super regional matchups. We've gone through all eight. Before we wrap this up, I want to ask, you know, last week we gave national championship picks. Dave and I went with UCLA. Joe went with Vanderbilt. Does anyone want to change their national championship pick after what they saw this weekend?
No, I'm sticking with the Bruins. I think they got, their scare this past weekend in their own regional, and, I think it kind of just woke them up. I think they're, again, we've talked about this a lot. They're the most complete team, And I think they carry that into Omaha, and Omaha gets a little easier because you have some days. It doesn't get easier. Let me rephrase that. Omaha's never easy. But you have some days off, which is going to stretch their deep pitching even farther. I'm sticking with the Bruins as my national champion.
Yeah, sticking with Vanderbilt. No reason to change that now, I think. I mean, obviously we talked about how we like them in this Super Regional. I think once you get to Omaha, really anything can happen. So, stick with the choice you've made because, I mean, to other, Dave's other point, I mean, the thing about Vanderbilt that you're a little bit concerned about is that, you know, sometimes – in the bullpen, it's not as consistent. They don't have maybe some of those high-end options other teams have, but that gets mitigated a little bit by the fact that, you know, if you do hit on one or two guys you like, you can kind of keep bringing them back. You're not going to get stretched out quite as much. So I still like Vanderbilt.
Yeah, I'll stick with UCLA. I mean, I maybe feel a little bit better about Vanderbilt right now than I do about UCLA, but I still do feel like UCLA is the most complete team in the nation and with the best pitching staff, and that's the kind of stuff that wins in the NCAA tournament. So we'll keep our national championship picks and we'll see how that fares this weekend in Super Regionals. So remember, if you are listening to this podcast and you are not subscribed to the Baseball America podcast, remember to subscribe on your favorite podcast app. I cannot tell you exactly when we will record a podcast next week. So that's why it's important to be subscribed, so it just shows up on your phone whenever it is we do it next week. Between traveling to Omaha and wrapping up Super Regionals and everything, we'll find a time to get it done. But the schedule as it stands is a little uncertain. So make sure you're subscribed so that you're not looking for that link. It just shows up there for you on your favorite podcasting app. And while you're at it, you might as well give us a rating or a review if you can. Hopefully 5 stars and nice comments there. You can check out plenty of content this week over at baseballamerica.com as the draft wraps up today and we start looking towards Super Regional matchups and everything else that we provide at this time of year over at baseballamerica.com. So make sure to check that out, and you can follow us on Twitter. We'll be giving thoughts throughout the weekend as these Super Regionals get underway. I am at Ted Cahill. Dave is at Dave Serrano 11, and Joe is at Joe_on_sports. So that does it for today on the Baseball America College podcast. Thank you all for listening. Thank you to Dave. Thank you to Joe. And we will see you back here next week.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medella is your reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.